www.webheadtheaterkill.radio.org. And you're listening to Radio Webhead Theater. That's right. This is Radio Webhead Theater. Another Sunday night. Here on killradio.org. Hey, tonight, very special guest tonight. That's right. Jenny Lenz, here in the studio. Jenny Lenz, punk archive photographer. Yes. And I am looking at some really cool punk archives here. Jenny Lenz. LA, New York, and London. www.jennylenz.net. Photo archives for documentaries, motion pictures, television, print. Wow. And she brought all these great music, and this is going to be a very interesting night. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We've got music all night long. And Jenny says she wants to stay for 3 hours. This is amazing. Usually our guests don't want to stay that long, but, you know, she's full of vim and vigor here. So there's the microphone. Oh, I found it. Okay. But for some reason, somebody's been playing with all the microphones and stuff, so, there we go. Getting all the levels right. And, so let's put on some little music while we get ready.
The seven seas, don't cry, baby. And I say, don't sigh, baby. Bye, 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 baby. When I come back, we'll live a life of ease. It seems kind of tough now to say goodbye this way. But Papa's gotta be rough now so that he can be sweet to you another day. Bye, bye, baby. Don't cry, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Your Papa's off to the seven seas. Tough now to say goodbye this way, but Papa's gotta be rough now so that he can be sweet to you another day. Bye, bye, baby, and don't cry, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Your Papa's off to the seven seas. Say your papa's off to the seven seas.
Hey, killradio.org. We got Jenny Lenz here in the studio. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, everybody.
How are you doing?
I'm very excited to be here. I have a lot of stories to tell and
yeah,
music
and all
to
these
share.
Photos that the people can't see because this is an audio-only show.
Wait a minute. They can see my photos.
Well, how would they go about doing that?
They would go to Jenny Lenz. That's JennyLens.org. And they would find over 300 small photos. And then I just added a new site, which is Jenny Lenz. It's not a new site, excuse me, it's a subdomain.
Yeah.
JennyLenz.net/merch, MERCH. And those photos are much larger. And all the photos have little stories underneath them. And there's quite a history there of early punk.
Early punk. You were there in the days of early punk. Hardly look old enough.
I'm so flattered. Thank you. Well, that goes into the first song that we're going to be playing in a few minutes about my attitude. It's a song about a particular age, but I think that age is all attitude.
Okay.
But I started taking photos with the Ramones on August 12th, 1976. And we'll talk about that later when I
76.
Play Ramones.
76?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But something I want to share with you, something happened last night that I'm very excited about.
Okay.
For my shopping cart, because I'm finally selling my photos to individuals the first time ever, I was looking through my Weirdos proof sheets.
And the Weirdos are? All the young people out there that don't know who the Weirdos are?
Well, the Weirdos just played Sunset Junction here in L.A., and they're going to be in England towards the end of the year. But they were one of the first bands to come out of the early punk days, and they started playing in the beginning of 1977 in Los Angeles. And at around spring of 77, a very early fanzine started called Slash. And you can find that on certain places. Collectors have it and all. Well, Slash didn't have a lot of money, as many of us didn't in those days, but we didn't let that stop us. Put on shows, and the groups would perform, and it was word of mouth. There were no advertisements on the internet. There was no advertisements in newspapers.
Was there an internet back then?
No, there wasn't. That's the whole point. You had to literally...
Al Gore hadn't created it
yet. We won't go there. But... the first Slash benefit was July 8th, 1977, and the Weirdos played. And there's a couple of shots of mine that are well known to anybody who has researched punk at all. And these shots are in a hallway where there's Darby Crash and Pat Smear, who are in the Germs, and they're tussling each other. They're holding onto each other and about to fall on the ground.
Yeah.
Joan Jett, before she was solo artist, was in the Runaways, and her co-guitarist, that's the right word, but the other guitarist, was Lita Ford, who also went on to a solo career, and the mayor of Sunset Strip, Rodney Bingenheimer, in the shop. So I have a couple of these shots, and I was working on them to put on my shopping cart, and I decided to take a look at this whole roll. And I found a shot of a man whom I didn't know I shot. And I'm wondering how many people out there know the answer. This is a puzzle.
A puzzle.
A puzzle. He is the man who signed the Ramones. He started Sire Records. He signed Television and the Dead Boys and Richard Hale and the Voidoids. And recently, he just got a huge award honor from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I know his daughter, Mandy. And Mandy asked me a few months ago if I ever shot her father. And I said, no. Was he in L.A.? No, no. I shot her mother, Linda, who was the co-manager of the Ramones. I shot her many times. So I was stunned to find just a little, about 25 hours ago, that I have a photograph of Seymour Stein in the hall, and he saw the Weirdos and passed up the chance to sign them. But I couldn't believe that.
Wow.
I had a shot of him, because a friend of mine is doing a book on LA punk, and his name is David Jones, and he's an archivist and a musician. And he told me, because I always email him and send him pictures when I find things, he said the Cliff of the Weirdos told him the story that Seymour Stein had been there. But up until the time I found this one negative last night,
nobody remembered.
Nobody had proof. Nobody had
proof that it happened.
So this is what I do all the time.
You create the proof.
I do. I have all these stories. So this is about the weirdos, and we're going to start off the first song, and I'm not going to tell you the name of it, and we'll just go ahead and play it.
If you guess, you could call in at 252-0998 and talk to Jenny Lenz.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, on air. So here's the first song we're going to play tonight. What song was that?
Teenage. I want a car. I want a girl. I want to be left alone. Well.
And you, the audience members, you could have won a car. And a girl. No. That was the contest, but, you know.
Yeah, I want a car. I want a girl. I don't want a girl. I want a guy. I have a car. Thing. But it's just this whole attitude, and that's what people say about me all the time. I have a really young attitude, and they think I'm their age, and I go, I shot Blondie when I was 13. I mean, do the math, okay? So, anyway, so I started taking photos.
Well, Blondie's still around.
Oh, I know, but in order for me to have shot Blondie in 1977...
No, don't tell them the date.
No, that's really important, because the whole point is I get emails from people all the time saying they wish they'd been around in the early days of punk. And I write them back. And
no,
I said,
you don't.
No, I wrote this on my homepage at jennylenz.net. I said, look, stop saying that. There were lots of people around then who didn't get into punk. And it wasn't a scene that happened by itself. We made it happen. So the point is you need to make it happen in your life. And that's what I'm waiting to see. And we took a lot of risks, and we had a lot of fun. But it is really important to put the date on, because things were a lot different then. And then they were very much the same. We had a gas crisis then. And I think gas went from 30 to 35 cents. No, we couldn't get gas. But we saw the beginnings of the change politically, and the beginnings of conservatism, and the punks sang about it. And punk is very political to me. I think that people really miss that all the time. But anyway,
you mean it's not just all fluff?
It's not at all fluff. If you listen to the songs, I mean, a very obvious example are The Clash, but there's also Gang of Four, but we have an LA group, which I'll play a little bit later, is The Dills. But what I want to do is I want to go back into this, because we try to make sense for this for all of you.
To the Wayback Machine.
I love the Wayback Machine. I grew up on Rocky and Bullwinkle. Yes. I love that. Who doesn't? One of the things I think you will find common with the early punks is we certainly loved our early animation and comics, and Rocky and Bullwinkle is very subversive. Anyway,
yes.
So I first started taking pictures.
What track did you want to play?
I want to play 17, but in a moment. So the reason I want to play this is it occurred to me a few months ago that it's important for me to tell people that my name is Jenny Stern. It was my birth name. I always hated it. But from 1976 to 1978, my photographs were published as Jenny Stern. And those are the most well-known photos. And I will tell in a few minutes how my name got changed, but this is a song by Black Randy, and listen to the beginning of it, because we don't have to listen to the whole thing, but just listen to the beginning of this song.
Okay.
So it's called Sperm Bank Baby.
Really?
Jenny Stern promised she was going to take all our pictures tonight, because we sing so nice. She likes that sort of thing. Baby, I'm looking for my dad. My back, baby, lonely and mad. My back, baby, I'm gonna be mad. Maybe he was rich, maybe he was poor, maybe he died in some world war.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Milton, pot of thieves, wild cord on my sleeve. Thick, heart of stone, my sins my own, they belong to me. Me. People say beware, but I don't care. The words are just rules and regulations to me, me.
Here she
And thank you for playing all of that. That song, Gloria, is rarely heard on the radio. And I remember
we can get away with that here because this is the internet.
This is, and it's wonderful. And the fact that we're allowed to have original programming is wonderful. And there's a story behind this, of course. Originally, Van Morrison, when he was in the group called Them, had a big hit with Gloria. And I saw them at my high school, which was Granada Hills High, out in the San Fernando Valley in L.A.
You're an L.A. girl.
I was born and raised in L.A. I have never been out of L.A. other than to shoot the Stones in Houston. And I went to some other country western thing in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I shot the Clash in England. But even though I shot a lot of New York punk bands, and I'm known for those photos, I've never been in New York. I'm not proud of that, but I've never been there.
They all came to you.
They all came to L.A. That's the story that we're talking about today, because people ask me all the time if I shot at CBGB's or New York. And
yeah.
I said,
Max's Kansas City.
Why do you say that? And say, well, because you're known for your Patti Smith pictures and your Ramones pictures and your Blondie pictures. And I say, yeah, they played L.A.
Right.
Hello. So, anyway, with Patti, with Gloria. So I was really upset because Van Morrison and Them played at our high school, whereas over at Cleveland High, the Doors played, and I was a big Doors fan. But I never saw them live. So, anyway, obviously, Patti loved Gloria as well. But the reason I play this is this song changed my life. I will never forget listening to it for the first time and just stopping dead in my tracks, because Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. They belong to me. It's called personal responsibility, which is the way that I live. Whatever happens in my life, I can't control things, but I am responsible for a lot. I can't blame someone else. I can't look to be saved by someone else. I have to do it myself. And I thought that was an incredibly gutsy way to start a record. And I said, there's a revolution going on in music. Whatever this is, I want to find out about it. So that was the end of 1975. And I saw Patti at the Roxy in January 76. And I read everything I could, which was very little. There wasn't much published about punk. And I read about the Ramones and got their album, and I was there the first night they played L.A., which was August 11th, 1976.
Where?
At the Roxy on the Sunset Strip.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is the second time I'd been to the Roxy.
Not Gazzari's, because, you know, he had all the hair bands.
Well, at the time, I went wherever the shows were, and actually, I rarely ever went to Gazzari's, because I think its heyday really was in the 60s. And then, like I say, the hair bands in the 80s, 70s, and 80s. But I used to go to the Troubadour. I saw Phil Oakes there. I love Phil Oakes, who was this amazing singer who influenced X. And he was very influential to a lot of the punks, even though he was considered definitely a folk singer. But anyway, I was at the Roxy, and I fell in love with Dee Dee Ramone's cheekbones.
Really? Dee Dee?
So I brought my camera the next night, and I didn't know how to use it. I didn't bring a flash, because I thought shooting a flash in someone's face was rude.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely rude.
Well, I was up right next to the stage, and there was another photographer, the late Richard Creamer, whom I didn't know at the time, just kept flashing.
Yeah.
And I met these girls because I used to go around to the clubs looking for shows, and they recognized me. And after the show, they said, do you want to go to the Sunset Marquee? Because the opening band, who were the Flaming Groovies, were there. Well, I didn't like the Flaming Groovies.
The Flaming Groovies? You didn't like them?
No, I think they suck. I'm sorry. I don't like them. I'm not sorry at all.
Okay.
And I'm sitting in the lobby, and I almost fell over because the Ramones walked in.
All the brothers.
All the brothers. I know nothing about rock and roll. I know nothing about the scene. I know nothing about the entertainment industry. I know nothing about taking photos. And I'm hanging out with the Ramones. Now, background information is that I was always very shy, very alienated, very alone. It was very hard for me to be accepted or ever feel accepted. And for 2 weeks, I followed them everywhere and took photos of them.
Okay. What color was your hair then?
Oh, my. The reason David asks this is that I have naturally curly hair, and my hair is a dark magenta right now, my whole head.
Yeah.
At that time, it was my natural dark brown hair.
Oh, okay.
But I did dye it a few years later, definitely. But the reason I go into this with Ramones is you have to go to my website. I only have a few of the many hundreds of photos posted. It's Jenny Lenz, JennyLenz.net/merch, MERCH. Even if you don't want to buy any photos, no problem. But I just posted some never seen early Ramon shots.
Yeah, I've never seen Joey look so young.
Well, the Joey one that David is looking at, I posted. We threw a party for them in August 76. This was backstage at the Starwood, and we put streamers up and baked a cake. I wrote this sign. Every word is a different felt marker color, thanking them for coming to L.A.
Wow.
I forgot about the sign, except that I saw it in my photos. I have pictures of Dee Dee Ramone with the party hat eating chocolate cake, but that's not posted yet. I took pictures of them swimming, hanging out. Linda Cummings, who is Johnny's widow, told me she had no photos of Johnny smiling. Well, she now has a few from me. But
that's great.
I couldn't believe, when she told me that, the first thing I said was, oh, I have lots. And I do. I posted a group shot of all of them. This would be January 27th, 1978. In color, they're all smiling. I have lots of black and white and color shots of Johnny smiling and Dee Dee in his towel that was used as his obit for spin, which is a hard thing to brag about. And I asked the photo editor why she chose that picture of Dee Dee. And she said, because he looked so sweet. And Dee Dee was very sweet to me. I have great pictures of Joey. You can see his eyes. His hair isn't covering his eyes.
Right.
His glasses aren't pushed up. Smiling. They were very optimistic. As Johnny had gone on record, they figured they would tour for 5 years, make some money, and be happy. They didn't realize it would be posthumous. It was a lifetime thing. So I have all these pictures of them. And nobody was taking pictures of them as much as I was. I shot them down in Orange County and up in San Francisco, and for 2 weeks, everywhere they were, for the most part,
I was their shadow.
They were really nice. I have slides of them looking at slides that I brought. I photographed them outside the pool at the Sunset Marquee, and Dee Dee is holding up the slide holder looking at 20 slides for the sun coming through it. And I remember talking to Dee Dee and asking him about the songs and all. So even if you don't have any room for photos, no money for photos, you don't collect photos, I want you to go to my new online shopping cart, because that's where the bigger photos are. So it's jennylenz.net/merch. And on the left side is navigation. And I broke it up into Ramones and then the individual ones. Dee Dee Ramone, Joey Ramone, Johnny Ramone. I did it alphabetically. And
none of the baby Ramones.
You mean like Marky, the people came afterwards?
Yeah.
I actually do have, I didn't even know this. I have shot some Marky. I don't remember shooting them December 1978 at the Whiskey. And I was looking through these slides, labeling them, and I thought, it was Tommy. And then I really looked at it carefully, like for about the fifth time, and I went, oh my God, that's Marky. So yes, I have live shots, but I don't have any offstage of him. I was really had access that first time. And then throughout 77, they came back and played the Whiskey when Blondie opened for them in February 77, August 10th, 77, and October 21st. I have lots of backstage stuff. But it was only that first tour that I really got them at the hotel and on the street and at record stores. And just a few of those are posted. And they're, it's a whole history
more
there.
More posted sometime soon in the future, I'm sure.
Well, here's a problem that I have, and I'm asking for help. I need a lot of help. I'm uncovering these amazing photos, like the one with Seymour Stein and these Ramones, and it takes time and money. Now, I don't mind the work, but I need help. I need equipment. I need archival holders for the negatives and slides. I need better scanners. I need better equipment. My equipment crashes all the time. So please tell your friends that I'm selling photos, because somewhere out there, there are people who want them and will buy them, because this is the only thing I'm doing in my life. So if you care about the photos, we need help. This is.
Well, you're far too talented to only be doing this.
This is 24/7. How long? Do you have any idea how many hours I put into the website and the merch?
This is your newest project.
This is it. Well, I've been offered books and documentaries and a variety of things, but everything gets paid at the back end, and I need good equipment. So people tell me to write grants, but I don't have time. So I really need
help.
Maybe
it's time that you had a concert.
Well, I've been offered one woman shows. Concert. Well, benefit would be amazing. Thank you, David. That would be awesome because I've been offered.
That's how we get new equipment here. We have benefits.
That's actually on my to-do list, is that I have a friend who's a publicist, and I wanted to talk to her about a benefit, but thank you. I need it. I mean, we have benefits for all kinds of reasons, and this is the deal. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with our culture. I recorded early New York, British, and L.A. punk that has never been told, and I have these amazing shots of the Boomtown Rats, Sir Bob Geldof in L.A., of Sham 69 in L.A., of Patti Smith, of Blondie, of
Mink DeVille.
Oh, yeah, I love Mink DeVille. Beautiful shots of Willie on stage.
How about Toots? You have any pictures of Toots?
Yes, I was about to say that. I'm pretty positive I have a color shot of Toots and Willie backstage.
Wow.
And when I say pretty positive, see, my files aren't exactly organized, and they aren't exactly digitized, and I didn't exactly
date it. I'm sure that they will be soon, because this woman has brought in a whole... I don't even have to write anything down like what we've played tonight, because she has everything typed. It's amazing.
I'm really organized, and I can tell you pretty much when I shot a lot of things, but I have to thank musician archivist David Jones, who again is the one who told me that Cliff from the Weirdos said that Seymour Stein was at Larchmont on July 8th, but David was kind enough to give me his timeline that he researched through flyers and fanzines and talking to people, and then I updated it through notes that I have on some of my pictures and diaries and other things.
Yeah.
But I spend a huge, I don't want to tell you, but I spend as much time figuring out when and where and who I shot as much as organizing it or putting it online. It's a huge endeavor. So
it always is.
Because I don't understand why I didn't write this information down, but I
didn't. So you were having too much fun doing it.
Well, I was
living
working too hard. I was having fun, but I was working really hard. But it was truly, think about this, sex and drugs and rock and roll. No AIDS.
Yeah.
No AIDS, no condoms.
That's right.
Cheap drugs.
Before piercings, people.
Yes, cheap drugs. We had acid, speed, mushrooms, grass, diet pills, cheap drugs, cheap digs, cheap living, and sex and drugs and rock and roll. So I'm really surprised I even shot as much as I did, considering. And people would tell me that all the time. I would show them slides and nags, and they'd say, but every time I looked at you, Jenny, you were dancing. When did you take rolls and rolls of film? And all I can say is it's magic. So we should listen to something.
And if only you stopped dancing and just only dedicated your total existence to photography.
Well, I did during those 4 years. And it really was 24/7 work taking these photos. And I surprised people because people ask me, oh, well, you know, to take a few shots, I go, thousands and thousands and thousands. And they can't believe it now. And they certainly couldn't then. Because I was out every night partying and getting laid and doing drugs and developing pictures and printing pictures. And I also sent a lot out there. So I mentioned that about the Weirdos. Oh, I mentioned that earlier about the Weirdos. I forgot to mention there's a couple of shots from that show that are rather well known. The LA Weekly about 2 years ago called it a classic, but they wouldn't name me by name or use the photo.
They do that.
So
that kind of backhanded compliment thing they always do.
Totally was. It's a shot of a guard with his fingers in his ears while John Denny, the lead singer of the Weirdos, is singing. And people just love that one. There's another one I love. The same guard put his fingers out with a V, like the two fingers, because the whole audience was giving him three fingers. It's if you hold your thumb and your pinky down, you have three fingers up. The Weirdos had that as a salute.
Oh, W.
So the W. So the audience put their arms out with this W to the guard, and the guard looked at them and replied with a V sign, thinking it was victory or peace.
No, that means fuck off.
No, fuck off is the one finger, the middle finger.
That's here in America, but I thought you're talking about
England. No, it's right here at Larchmont Hall when the Slash put on the show. That was Larchmont is around the corner from Paramount Studios.
Yeah.
So no, this was definitely where he thought it was the peace man. It's a thing that Richard Nixon. There's a famous poster of him with the fingers.
Yeah.
So the guard is doing that, clueless that the Weirdos.
I am not a crook. Not a crook.
And it's really great. It's a great, great shot of Culture Clash where the guard's got his fingers in his ears. And the whole series, I didn't realize this till I looked at the negatives recently. The guards tried to stop the show. And the photos show this because I was on the side of the stage. Audience left, stage right. And the audience was constantly pushing themselves onto the stage, sitting on the stage, falling on the stage. So which didn't bother the weirdos. But finally, the guards came up. There were two of them. And they felt there was too much pandemonium. And what's great about all these negatives is shows that John kept singing, the band kept playing, and the kids refused to stop and behave.
Right.
And they just put up the three fingers saying, you know, weirdos, and the guard thought, you know, they were trying to appease him. Please. Yeah. So,
well, you know, at least the guard wasn't, you know, part of the Hell's Angels, because that could have been really messy.
Yeah, he was just some hired hand who wasn't, definitely. Well, the Hell's Angels, the reference for those of you who are too young to know, was Altamont, that when the Stones hired the Angels to guard a show up in Altamont, the Angels got very violent and a young man was stabbed to death. And I don't believe they've ever figured it out or whatever, but it was really bad. So no, the people in LA knew better than that. And usually we didn't even have guards. It was so unusual that they were there.
Yeah.
But since we're talking about the Ramones, I'm going to play a song which I know you've all heard. It's been used on Pepsi commercials, it's been used on Singular, blah, blah, blah. But hey, yes, you know what? I love it. I love the Ramones.
But this is the original version, not the commercialized,
well, this is
big media version that you normally hear.
Well, I have to thank Rhino. I have some photos that they've used through the years, and part of my payment always is to get some CDs.
Yeah.
And I'm always behind because I want to play a Gang of Four, and I don't have their newly remastered one from Rhino. But this is Rhino's.
Well, you got to talk to Mr. Rhino.
Well, they're good to me. They always tell me because it's part of my contract that it's just, you know, for some people, they're glad to just take the money, and I say, pay me whatever. I'm not a hard nose about what they pay me, but I say, I want some CDs. So this is Loud, Fast Ramones, their toughest hits, and they used a photo of mine in here, I think.
Excellent.
So it's the first cut, and it's great. It's a classic.
Beat on the brat with the baseball.
Beat on the Brat.
And I have a Beat on the Brat story.
You do.
I asked Dee Dee Ramone around the pool of Sunset Marquee, August 76, about the songs. I asked him about 53rd and 3rd and Beat on the Brat. This is his story. I'll break your heart. I shouldn't tell the punchline. Anyway, he said, well, yeah, in the neighborhood that they ran around in, which was the Bowery, they were given a hard time. And, of course, they came from Forest Hills, Queens.
Okay.
And they looked unusual.
With the hair, even back then, the jeans?
They had long hair, and they had torn jeans because they didn't have money. Torn jeans was not a look. It wasn't a designer look. It wasn't something you could buy.
They didn't spend hours just, you know, unfraying the...
They didn't have money. Those guys did not have money, and they spent a lot of time out in the street, and it gets cold in New York. That's why the leather jackets.
Right.
And they had the long hair. And so Dee Dee was tight with Joey, and he said, you know, we're out walking on the street, and, yeah, we carry baseball bats because people give us a hard time. He said, we're all so strange looking, especially Joey, you know? And that just breaks my heart because now I read all the time things like, don't you wish you looked like Joey Ramone? I mean, I literally read that.
Yeah.
And if Joey could have heard that when he was alive and young, that would have meant the world to him.
Really?
He was about 6'6", and he always leaned hunched way over. All the shots I have him even sitting down, he's always hunched over.
He felt so tall.
He was so tall, and that's what Dee Dee was saying, is that Joey was so much taller, and he looked strange, and that's why Joey had the hair on his face.
Yeah.
He was very self-conscious about his looks. And so Beat on the Brat.
But like Howard Stern, women love him.
Well, if you've seen End of the Century, Joey had a difficult upbringing. As his mother said, he was always very sickly.
Yeah.
And people did pick on him for a variety of reasons. When you're different looking, you don't look like the typical cheerleader football guy, which was so prevalent in
the 70s. Yeah, back in New York, too.
Yeah, especially in the 70s. You didn't have as much diversity.
Wear your Docksiders or...
Well, think about even like models. Nowadays, we can have models who are different ethnicities, but it was a big thing to have somebody who was African-American. Now we have Latino models and Iranian models, and they're top models, but you couldn't have that in those days. They all had to be the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Oh, and I just read this in Entertainment Weekly yesterday. Joey Ramone just got a Hebe Award. It was some kind of award that they awarded him as a Jewish musician.
A Hebe?
Yes, and the award had a... bronzed bagel, and his mother accepted it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I love this song Beat on the Brat because that was based upon reality.
This song goes
reality.
To, isn't Rosh Hashanah coming
Oh,
up?
Shana Tova. Yes, Rosh Hashanah is Monday night.
Yeah.
And if you're in Los Angeles and you're a liberal and progressive Jew like I am, that you don't go for all the holidays, but you believe in the moral, ethical aspects of Judaism, a workman's circle on Robertson, just south of Pico, on the west side of the street, will have services that are very inspiring. The whole idea of a New Year's in September has to do with the change of seasons.
Right.
And the Jewish holidays always had to do with two things. One was a victory over a war, like Hanukkah is not the Jewish Christmas. It preceded it by at least 2,000 years.
Right.
It was way before Christ. But it was the first war based upon religion. It was the first religious war, and
okay.
We Jews won.
I just thought it was about oil.
Yes, because the Syrians were surrounding the temple, and, you know, in darkness, they could creep up and take over the temple. So there was only enough oil to last one night, except that it lasted seven nights. And by that time, reinforcements came, and then the Jews won the war.
And so that's the miracle.
That's the miracle. And Hanukkah is actually Festival of Lights or Feast of Lights, which has been used again for Christmas.
And they the always cradle.
The whole point is that the words Feast of Light and Festival of Lights, which Griffith Park uses, that's here in L.A., when they decorate it for Christmas, and I always object. I go, hello, Festival of Lights is Hanukkah, and it's not a Jewish Christmas. So anyway, so the New Year's is now, because it's a change of season. It's to celebrate that we made it through the summer, and we've got a bounty to live on when we don't have as much food in the fall. You wouldn't know that in L.A., you know, we get things shipped from all over the world. So that is Monday night. And Jewish holidays always start on the nights. And then the following week, we've got Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. And I never celebrate that because every day I'm aware of things I've done wrong. And every morning, the first thing I say is, what can I do right today?
Yeah.
And right now, I'm working on my archive. So every day I wake up and I go, how much can I get done today? You know, what can I do today?
Uh-huh.
So I'm really focused on that. So anyway, Joey Ramone.
Joey Ramone gets the Hebe Award.
He gets the Hebe Award. And here's something I have on my website. Again, it's jennylens.net. And if you scroll on the left side, I have the nav bars on all my pages there. You'll find one called Jewish Punks, because it occurred to me, I was talking to a friend of mine from the early days, that there were a lot of Jews who started punk. And I didn't know. I grew up around a lot of white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, so I totally relate to where Joey's coming from.
Right.
I was always picked on because I was the only Jew in my class, and I also have always been fat, and it's something I struggle with all my life.
You grew up in New York.
But no, I didn't. I grew up in the Valley when it was white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in Northridge at the time.
Oh, my gosh. You went to Northridge, too?
Yeah. I grew up in Northridge. And I got my BA at
Did you go to Taft?
No, I went to Granada
Frost.
Hills High. Oh, not only did I go to Granada Hills High, that's what I'm saying when I saw them.
Yeah.
I had to take the public bus with the Alamany kids, and the Alamany kids were the Catholic kids who were really rude on the bus.
I went to Frost Junior High.
Where's that?
That's in Northridge.
Oh, I don't know.
I guess it was newer.
I guess so. And then I went to Northridge Junior High and then Callahan. Nobel. Callahan was the what do you call that? The elementary school. Alfred Nobel Junior High.
Yeah.
And then I had to take the bus to Granada Hills. Anyway, so we're talking about Jews. It was really weird to me because I don't know fellow Jews. I just haven't been around them that much. And I always say. So anyway, I compiled a list and I put it on the net, and people have written to me, and it just struck me that a lot of Jews started punk.
Yeah.
And if you look at my website, you'll see, I mean, people told me Malcolm McLaren's Jewish. And I'm going, oh my God. Seymour Stein, who I said I photographed, obviously, he and Linda and Mandy are Jewish. And he started Sire Records and Sign Television and Ramones and so many others. And then you've got Joey Ramone, and you've got Bob Gruen, the New York photographer who shot so much punk. And I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I thought that was fascinating. And in L.A., so many.
And a little later, maybe Perry Farrell.
Yeah, that's a good point. That'd be later, because I was thinking about, like, Brett Gurwitz of Epitaph Records, because there's the Stern brothers, Mark and Sean Stern.
Yes, I went to school with the Stern brothers.
Well, my brother's name is Mark Stern, too, because I mentioned that my name used to be Stern. So a lot of the early record companies were started by Jews. And if you look at the fanzines and photographers and performers and managers, there's a lot of Jews involved in punk. And so I wrote that. I said, well, why not? We're the original scrappy outcasts when people have been trying to kill you for thousands of years. What have you got to lose? So, you know, and that's the thing that's really important. I don't want to focus on this thing being Jewish, but it's very important to be a risk taker.
Okay.
And I get these emails from people all the time who, again, they're so jealous and envious of what we did. And I say, look, we took risks. We did. We squatted. We scrounged for money. We did whatever we could. I'm not saying break the law, although some of us certainly did. We lived for punk, and we took a lot of risks, and we made choices in our lives to dedicate time to this. And that's what I want people to realize, is it wasn't easy. Read Lexicon Devil, the book about the germs. There's a chapter on the Canterbury. I reread that and brought home a lot of memories of what I did, some of which I will not talk about yet. Broke the law. I was willing to go to jail for my photos.
Yeah.
I broke the law. That's as far as I'll say. But the statute of limitations had run out. But it was dangerous, scary times. We ran around with a lot of scary people.
Uh-huh. In fact,
the mask. Why don't we play this Screamer song, and then I'll tell you the mask story. You want to tell?
Go ahead. I was going to ask, Tomato Del Plenty?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Was he Jewish?
No, he was. Oh, I shouldn't scream. I'm sorry. No, David Harrigan was Irish. His parents were Irish.
Okay.
H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N.
Or tomato.
If you know George M. Cohen, H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N. Yes. I can't carry a tune, but David Harrigan. Yeah, tomato. So let's play a Screamer song.
Yes.
And then I'll tell more stories about the Ramones and the Screamers and the mask.
You know, we just had Adam Wolf on last week.
Yeah. Nice that, Jewish boy.
Yeah, of course. And then the week before that, we had Brendan, who wrote Lexicon Devil.
You know what Brendan told me the other day? It's so funny. He was on my website, and he's scrolling down. He goes, oh, Jewish punks. My grandmother was Jewish. So I added
him. There you
go. Added him to the list.
You add the landlord to the list.
Oh, Brendan. I love Brendan. I love him. I adore him.
He's going to be on next week, so maybe you could call in.
Oh,
and
gladly.
And surprise him. Because we need to surprise him. He wanted the dirt on everything. I don't know.
Oh, well, when I wrote the dirt on Brendan and me, he made me take it off my website.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he wants the dirt. Selective dirt.
Yeah, selective dirt.
I love you, Brendan.
So.
Let's go! Don't let it go! loca, pinche loca.